This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Melissa Moretti.
And Melissa, first off, let's talk about this. It's cold.
It's cold.
It's cold outside now.
It's raining.
Winter has set in.
That's right.
Or not set in, but is coming.
I'm wearing a turtleneck.
Yeah, you got the turtleneck on. I myself forgot a jacket at home today, so I had to go into our storage at the office there and rip out a brand new jacket to put on so I can try to stay warm. It's a nice jacket.
That's right.
How is things on your end? Are you guys seeing it slow down? Because usually this is a time of year we kind of feel things kind of slowing down. Listings aren't coming in. You're not really seeing a lot of deals come through because no one wants to be doing subjects over the holidays. We haven't slowed down. If anything, we're picking up, which is kind of going against the grain. I think it says that the market wants to do deals. What are you guys seeing? Because I think this is going to be a very busy holiday season on the commercial side.
Okay. I don't think it's going to be super busy in residential, to be honest.
You guys are going to go opposite then.
Well, what I think is that it's going to slow right down in December for sure. And then it's going to get busy when people come up back from the holidays.
We've got so many closings in December already that people are trying to cram things in before the holidays. But I think the one thing too that I can kind of see from a transaction side of things is usually, you know, listings peter out because people don't want stuff listed over the holidays that they don't have to. We haven't really seen a slowdown in listings, to be honest with you. We've actually got a ton of listings that came in so far in November. What are we today? Wow. Today we're the 22nd.
Yep.
Okay, so 2/3 of the way in. We're still busy. But the amount of deals that are coming in, that are continuing to come in, that got like December 21st removals, December 28th removals, that is the one thing I'm a little surprised at, because what you'll typically see is the activity on the transaction side start to fall off as tenants and buyers are becoming disinterested. But I think right now there's a lot of good incentives out there, especially on new construction stuff, which we can dive into that today on the program. But I think there's just the amount of deals that are coming in, which I think is remnants that the market is going to have a great banner year in 2024, 2025, as interest rates fall off. People want to do deals. Mm-hmm. People have just been waiting for things to kind of get normalized with falling interest rates. We now have a provincial government set. We now have the American government set in January. I think the writing's on the wall, what's going to happen here in Canada next year in 2025 with our federal government. So I think people are kind of feeling a little bit more comfortable coming back to the table now, and we're seeing a ton of transactions so far in the fall.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
There's a bonfire. It's burning. People want to do deals.
There was a double rainbow today.
There's a double rainbow today. What's the meaning behind a double rainbow?
I don't know. Did we search that up
to find out what that is? Okay, so
Corey, I heard we have a very special guest on the podcast today. You told me it's potentially the smartest man in real estate.
I did not say that.
You did,
Come on.
You said, I'm not really sure how we secured this guest.
I didn't say that.
So who's our guest?
Well, this guest is a big get for the program.
Right.
Like, I'm surprised they even got back to us.
Right.
Never mind, we got them on.
You do good work.
Took a lot of convincing. But I am thrilled to have our guest today. Myself, I'm the guest. Why am I the guest today? So I'll tell you why. So we've got two more episodes, I think, before the holidays kick in. So we've got great guests for those to join us. But last year, around this time, we did an episode on kind of like how to like double your money in commercial real estate.
The secrets.
And I thought, you know what? When we're kind of scheduling out the guests and everything for December and November, I thought, you know what? We're going to throw an episode in where we're going to give the secrets to how to double your cash position in commercial real estate.
Sounds like the best Christmas gift.
Best one. Because when we did the show last year around this time, I can't remember an episode where I got so many emails. I got text messages. I got phone calls like, do you guys take investors? Where do I find these properties? What community is these properties in? Can you put me in touch with someone that knows about these properties? So I thought, you know what? It's the holiday season's upon us. We're in the spirit of giving.
That's right.
We're going to give the secret to doubling your cash position in commercial real estate for free on the program today.
My eyes are lighting up.
For free on the program today.
Fantastic.
So without further ado, let's get into it. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.com.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Here is the secret to how to double your cash position. So we're going to put out the ground rules of what we're working with. So for this example, we're going to be saying we're going to be buying a industrial building,
okay,
and we're going to go to Kelowna for this one just because there's certain markets. This is not, I don't want to say it's a trick. It's not a trick. It's insight is Kelowna works it. We're going to buy an industrial building at a market cap rate with lease rates of $8 a foot. Okay. So let's go back to that. So we're buying an industrial building in Kelowna at a market cap rate, $8 a foot. So $8 a foot represents what the average price per foot that the tenants are paying. So there's four steps to doing this properly. And if those who listened last year, we're going to go back through those four steps. So step number one that I tell everyone, make sure you know the market you're buying into, because the vacancy rate is the secret. And by that, I mean, if I were to go to say Alberta, I took the same similarity where I figure that the average price per foot of the building is 50% below market, but my vacancy rate of that asset class is 10, 12, 15%. And my tenant can get up and just walk themselves down the hall, down the street to get the same building they just left for half the price. This whole thing doesn't work. So rule number one, know the market you're buying in. Know the vacancy rate. And traditionally, you need to get vacancy rates probably like sub 5%-ish in most asset classes, because that's going to waver depending on location. But if you look at Kelowna's industrial class B lease rate or vacancy rates, arguably probably like 3, 4%. You'll read reports like, oh, they quadrupled. Well, they quadrupled from 1 to 4. A balanced market is traditionally like 8 to 10. So still have lots of opportunities. So we're buying into a market that we understand, and we're buying into a market where we know the vacancy of the asset class that we're buying. Rule number one.
Got it.
Got it. Get your pencil out here.
I'm taking notes.
Taking frantic notes here.
That's right.
So rule number two, know the market's lease rates of what you're buying into, where people make the assumption the guy's paying, or the tenant's paying $8 a foot. They're like, I don't know, market might be 12, market might be 20. You have to know the market that you're buying in. So in our example, and this is kind of a real life example, is a Kelowna Class B industrial building is probably going to be around $16 a foot. So if I'm buying a building at the average price per foot of the tenants are paying is $8, I know that I could potentially grow that NOI by 100% from $8
so
to $16.
Where am I getting these figures from? How do you know? Vacancy?
So
if I said I want to go to Vernon.
Yep. You want to go to Vernon.
I want to find out the vacant. Do I just Google that?
No, you need a broker that really knows the market and the asset class that you're buying in.
Okay.
There's a ton of crap out there. And when I say crap, I'm not referring to like the properties are crap, but I mean like they're not great purchases in today's market because of interest rates, all of that stuff. So you have to have a broker that knows the market intimately in that asset class and that marketplace in order for this strategy to work.
So we got to back it up to step one.
You got to back it up to step one. You got
to find yourself a good broker.
Yeah, there you go. We'll add to step one. Step one A, step one B.
Right.
Make sure you have a good broker because you need to understand the marketplace. And in secondary and tertiary markets, location, location, location is more important there than ever. Because what happens a lot of times too is people from the Lower Mainland, you buy something in Surrey or Coquitlam or Burnaby or Vancouver, and you might be a couple blocks off the beaten path. Because there's so many tenants that are trying to backfill spaces, eventually you're probably going to find a tenant. You go into these secondary and tertiary markets, you might be vacant for years if you miss the spot. So location, location, location is everything. You miss it by two or three blocks or the downtown core is developing away from you, you might have problems. So step number one, know the market you're in. Make sure you have a really good broker. We're going to talk about that. Know the vacancy rate of that market. Step number two, know the lease rates of the market you're buying into. Don't make any assumptions because also with location, 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 you might get $16 a foot on this block, but you might go four blocks over and get $12 a foot. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's like 25% difference in your rent.
Huge.
That's the be all end all. So number two, make sure you understand the leasing rates of the market you're buying into. And people that traditionally do this, they focus or they're hyper-focused on three or four areas, three or four markets, maybe like an Nanaimo or an Abbotsford or a Chilliwack, and they kind of really play within their own sandbox. You don't make the assumption, I'm going to go over here and what works in Chilliwack is going to work in Vancouver, what works in Vancouver is going to work in Chilliwack. Completely different marketplaces. Have to understand those things. Number three, this is a big one. You have to have month to month or at least lease rates that are probably coming to expiry or up for renewal, ideally within 24 months. Because when we get into the financing aspect, which I'll talk about after, it's really, really important that you can turn this building over in a reasonable amount of time. Otherwise, you're going to be bleeding money probably for a long period of time with regards to this. And that's all going to fit into your performance, which we'll talk about in a second. So number three, you have to have shorter term leases in place or month-to-month leases or maybe vacancies as well with it in order to turn the building over. Now, from a financing standpoint, that's an absolute nightmare. No lender is going to lend to a building that's dramatically underperforming. And underperforming is, in our scenario here, everyone's paying $8 a foot, the market's 16. That's 50% under market value there. You can raise those rents by about 100% if you can turn everybody. Most lenders aren't going to lend to that. So you need to have mezz debt, which we'll talk about the financing aspect in a second here. So you need to have short-term leases because it's very expensive capital that you're going to use to turn these buildings over.
Expensive capital.
Expensive capital. And by that, I mean, you're going to probably to like a MIC for the capital. Most Schedule I banks or credit unions probably aren't going to be that interested at this point in time.
MIC. You're going to have to laugh.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have to go to a MIC or a B lender potentially, maybe we'll say. And you're probably going to pay prime plus three, prime plus four for the capital. You're probably going to pay a 2% deal fee up front. If you can't turn the building over after a year, you're going to have to re-up that mortgage. They're going to charge you another probably 1% fee on that money. So it can become very, very expensive.
Right.
So the shorter the leases are, the quicker I can turn them. Understanding the vacancy of this market will also determine how quickly I can backfill. If the asset class and the market that I'm in has a vacancy problem, I might be sitting there for a long period of time pouring money into this thing, which is all post-closing capital that's on my cap stack that is just going to get depleted and my returns are going to fall and fall and fall and fall.
Not good for the pro forma.
Not good for the pro forma. Not good for the investors. A lot of people make the assumption that if you own commercial real estate, you're really, really rich. And that it can't be farther from the truth. Commercial real estate is a slow, drawn-out process. It's a very expensive thing to be a landlord if things don't go according to plan. And by that, I mean you put a tenant in there, they want free rent, they want fixturing, they want TI, agents are getting paid, a lawyer gets paid to draft a lease. It might cost you $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 to place a tenant in a space between all your free rent and all your costs associated with it on a five-year deal. And then come year two, they don't exist. They go out of business. They're gone. Well, guess what? The next tenant comes forward and they don't care what you just gave the last guy or girl. They only care about their deal now. So they might want another $40,000, $50,000 in free rent and fixturing and TI all over again. well, I might be $100,000 potentially into two tenants in 13 months. And if I actually go through and pencil out my NER or my net effective rate of what those two things are going to cost me, I might break even at the end of a 3 or 4 year lease with all my expenses I've had to pour in versus the rent I'm collecting back. So really important to make sure that you proper due diligence, because it can be a very expensive proposition being a landlord.
Okay.
Questions on step number three.
Okay. So you want short-term lease rates, but what if there's nobody there?
Don't be completely turned off by that, because as long as you're following step number two and number one, meaning you understand your vacancy rate of the asset class you're buying in, you're buying into, make sure you understand like the lease rates of the asset class you're buying into, there could be various reasons why it's vacant. You might have a landlord that just doesn't owe any money on the building, doesn't really care, really, really picky. That could be a problem. You may have an agent that's not showing the property, right? People might be calling on it. They're not getting back to them. There could be various factors. You want to use your judgment call. If I'm buying into a marketplace that has like a 1% vacancy and that's really well located and everything on the block is $22 and that's for $18, I'm going to start looking for exterior factors of what, why isn't this leased?
Right.
You know, maybe it's the building condition. Maybe it's asbestos in the building that tenants want the landlord to pay for. So you have to kind of peel back the onion a little bit.
Right.
But so knowing the market's
important.
What's
kind of the ideal situation? Do you want it to be vacant? Is that, I guess.
Well, it wouldn't be the worst case scenario if it's vacant. Now, ideally, if you got some tenants in there and they're below market rents, at least you're gathering some income on the property because all the costs have to go into your performer to make sure it makes sense.
Right.
So step number four, and this is really, really important. You have to buy it at a current market cap rate on current income. So what that refers to, if I'm buying into a market and the market is a 5 cap rate,
okay,
and the income is half what market is, I have to buy it at market cap rate of 5% on half of what the market rent is, meaning on current income. I can't pay for future value. So if I have a building that is leased at $8 a foot and market is 16, arguably half of what the market is,
okay,
I can't sell it to you. If I can't, you can't buy it on future income. I right. can't buy it on what they call stabilized income, like where I'm selling it to you at a 5 cap based on market rents.
Because that's your lift, right?
That's the lift. Because if I'm taking on all the risk, I'm taking everything on,
yeah,
taking all the costs, that I want to be rewarded for that. Those days of selling stuff on future income or stabilized income back in like 2017, 2018 are gone.
It no especially longer today. Becomes an opportunity.
It no longer becomes an opportunity. Yeah. So I have to know the market that I'm buying into. Like we talked about number one, number two. Part of that is you need to know the cap rates in that market. And I don't want to pay for my own risk by paying for future value that I can't extract. So if the market's a 5 cap rate and the income's dramatically low, I still have to buy it on close to a 5 cap rate. Now if I get it for 4.5 or something like that, it's not the end of the world. But I can't get it so low that I'm fighting just to get my money out of it. Right. So you have to buy it on a market cap rate. So if I take a building, a Class B industrial building in Kelowna, and all the tenants are paying $8 and I feel the market is $16 and the cap rate maybe is like 4.5 or 5, I got to get it somewhere around there on current income, not future income.
Right.
Because a lot of agents will market stuff on stabilized income, all of that stuff. You don't want to do that. If you're a seller and you can market that and someone's going to pay you, take the money and run.
Yeah.
Because they're paying for their own risk. They're going to incur all these costs and they're going to fight just to get their money out of it versus you have to buy it on a current income.
Got it.
So how does all this pencil when it comes to the financing standpoint? How do I double my cash position? It sounds really, really good when we talk about it that way. But what are the numbers here? So let's, for example.
I need an Excel spreadsheet.
You need Excel. I'll set you up with one.
You're going to get... I'll say it was a performer. Hundreds of emails for that.
So here's how it works. Okay, so I'm buying a building and we're going to say the building is $2 million.
Okay.
And I'm buying it on a fair market cap rate. So I'm probably going to be leveraging 65% loan to value on that.
Because you have to go with
alternative lender.
Okay.
But keep in mind that 65% loan to value at that interest rate, prime plus 3, prime plus 4, is not going to carry itself with the rent. So you're going to be losing money every month on that interest because the rent on the building currently will not be able to support the mortgage more times than not. So if I'm running a deficit of $3,000 a month, for argument's sake, $3,000 a month, and all my leases are coming due in the next 12 months, you want to pencil that you're probably going to have to potentially pay into that mortgage $36,000, grand times 12.
Which is why if a tenant is month to month, that would be
ideal,
preferred.
Right, because I can go in there and try to get them out. Yeah. You also got to make sure that you're carrying, you're penciling into your pro forma vacancy cost because not everyone may stay. So you're going to have a vacancy cost you have to take into place. If you do encounter vacancy, you're going to have legal and realtor fees to get back up. You're going to have TIs. So you want to make sure you're penciling all of this stuff into your pro forma and not just assuming it's going to go to plan. I can tell you firsthand, nothing goes to plan in commercial real estate.
So if I'm just starting out, what's kind of the ideal situation in terms of number of tenancies? Like if I just have one tenant, is that better than I've got three or four?
It can be depending on the size of it. So here's the absolute ideal situation for a first-time investor. You find a strata lot that the tenant's on a month-to-month and they're paying half the value of what the fair market rent is.
Okay.
You buy it. You call the tenant. The tenant says, I'd love to stay. You tell them it's $16 and they sign a lease.
Easy.
That would be the ideal situation. We're too in that same situation, but we're doing it in a multi-tenanted building. So if I'm buying the building and it's 65% loan to value, I need to pencil in the fact that I'm going to be losing money on the building every month. I may have vacancy costs I have to deal with. I may have real estate, legal, TIs, free rent, fixturing. I got to pencil into my thing. So if I'm buying it at 65% loan to value, I'm for this situation, we're going to say the building is $2 million. So I need 65% loan to value, which is about $700,000 you need to put down in this scenario.
Yeah.
Right. So that's $700,000 plus my closing costs, plus my money is going to take to actually like carry the building, free rent, fixturing. Let's just say everything in is $850,000 for argument's sake. That is my cash position. And whenever we're looking at these type of value add properties, you're looking at cash on cash returns more than anything. I can put 850 up. How much of that can I get back on a refi? How much of that can I grow in equity on the property? What can I do? So 850,000 in our example, here's the number we're working off of. That's what we're looking to double. How do I double my cash position in the property?
And let's back it up for the listeners. When you said refi, what do you mean by that?
Refinancing the building once it's stabilized to take some of that money off the table or back out to de-risk the asset.
Okay.
So once
I have my new tenant in, he's paying market rents.
Yep. So here's the thing. So we're buying the building for $2 million. We're going to double the rents on this building is what we're projecting. So we're going to say our total cash position on this is $850,000. My down payment, property transfer tax, closing costs. I need a slush fund, all of that stuff. So we're going to say things are going to $850,000. And now I'm going to go through my building and over the course of a year, I've been successful. And now I've gotten the lease rates from $8 to a blended average of $16 for the full building. My NOI has doubled. I bought on a fair market cap rate of 5. And we're going to assume the cap rate has not compressed and the market cap rate is still 5. So based on these really, really rough numbers, my building should have doubled in value now because my lease rates have doubled. The cap rate has remained the same. My NOI has doubled on this because we have true triple net leases. My cash position would have more than doubled in this circumstance where I bought for 4. If bought for 2, the building is now worth 4. I put down $850,000. I've gained $2 million in equity on the property. I've well positioned myself to over double my cash position in the property in a short period of time. One email I got all the time when we did this last episode was, do these buildings exist? These buildings do exist. When we talk on the program all the time about secondary markets like Nanaimo and Vernon and Kelowna and Kamloops, this is where you can find legacy leases. And to draw an example, if we go back to Yale Town, which is everyone can kind of make a remnant, remember, if you go back to like the early 2000s, you were probably finding lease rates on the retail side of like $35 and $45. In comes the SkyTrain, 2012, 2015, 2016, 2018. Those tenants that may have signed a 10-year lease back in 2008 and their 10-year lease is coming due in 2018, there's a very realistic chance that their rent has doubled on them. They're not signing going from 40 to 45. They're going from 40 to 80.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the trick. You have that one-time generational turn of that rent. That tenant going from 80, 5 years later might sign at 90, which, trust me, is still a good increase, but it's not that generational type turn. And there's only certain markets you can find these like legacy leases in where market demand has swelled so much over that time that you now can get much higher rents from them. And because the vacancy rate of the marketplace is so low, the tenants don't really have an option potentially of going somewhere else. Now, it doesn't mean they can't, it doesn't mean they're going to stay, but it means there's not a lot of places for them to go because the vacancy rate is so low.
And just to be clear, because I come from the residential world and we have the Residential Tenancy Act.
Yeah.
So I can't just buy a property and ask a tenant to leave.
Well, yes, you can in commercial if they're on a month to month.
Okay.
You don't have the same governance. There's a Commercial Arbitration Act out there and stuff like that. If a tenant does not provide written notice, assuming your lease is, you know, read quite conventional, the tenants are not in default and they forgot to provide written notice to you. A lot of leases will say the tenant has to provide no earlier than 9 months, no later than six. So there's a window there in which they have to provide you written notice. Assuming they don't provide that written notice, you're not governed to go back to them at fair market value through the Commercial Arbitration Act, which a lot of times may or may not even apply. A lot of people just kind of go with it. So that's where you could arguably charge $1,000 a foot. Now, they're not going to stay at that price. So you definitely want to try to keep them the best you can because that's going to minimize your capital exposure
right on
it. So it's just a matter of making sure that, from a good landlord perspective, you can't be successful as a landlord if your tenants aren't successful first and foremost. Mm-hmm. So going in and just trying to jack rent up on people like that, 9 times out of 10 could not be further from the truth with regards to a successful outcome, because if they can't make it, they got to move out. All of a sudden, you're starting the whole process all over again. So to be a successful landlord, you got to have successful partnerships with your tenants. When I say partnerships, if I'm buying your house and we don't get along during the negotiation, once I pay you, we will probably never talk again. But if we're a landlord-tenant relationship, we're probably in bed together for 5 years. I'm your landlord, you're your tenant, we got to coexist.
Right.
So that's why I said you got to really look at it as a partnership moving forward, because if you get into disputes with your tenants, you have problems with your tenants, or they can't pay the rent because of unfairness from the landlord, it can be a challenging outcome. So in this circumstance here, if I buy it for $2 million and I can double the rent because the market is now allowing for that, and there's not a lot of vacancy for the tenants to really move or reposition, that is now my lift on my property, which creates either a great sale if I wanted to exit, but you're going to pay capital gains right away. It could create a great refinancing opportunity for me where I can now bring in higher debt, take that money off the table with the mezz debt, which is really important. I now bring in conventional. I now get a large portion of my capital back of my investment. Maybe I'm getting 50% or 60% of my capital out back in my pocket. So now I'm de-risking the asset. The higher income can now carry a higher mortgage. You'll also probably find you're in a positive cash flow position. If you don't want to take equity takeout, but you just want to replace the mortgage, you can do that. And you'll probably be in a very, very strong cash flow position where maybe you're seeing positive cash flow of $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. You can also take that approach. I'm always a big thing. If I can get as much money out of the investment as possible to de-risk it, so I can then reposition that money in a similar type investment down the road and do that over and over and over again, I could potentially recycle that capital 2 or 3 times from my initial war chest to create 2 or 3 buildings with that one initial war chest versus having to save, buy a property. I can buy a property, refinance, take more capital, take that initial capital, put it back in another property and do it over and over again. So it sounds like on paper, it almost sounds too good to be true, but it does exist out there. You just have to really understand the markets you're in. And the other kicker is you got to have building operation knowledge, which you can hire a great management company to do that for you. You really got to make sure you understand the inspection process and what has to get, because what you can run into is post-closing cap costs, CapEx costs, fixing a roof, all that stuff. All of that's just going to is capital out of pocket. That's going to drive down your returns, but increase your capital injection to the property. So I know it sounds like a lot to take in a short period of time, but this is our Christmas gift to the listeners. 4 steps on how to more than double your cash position in your property in commercial real estate.
It's kind of like a commercial BRRRR.
Yeah, it's very similar to that.
I think you need an acronym.
Do you have a suggestion?
Well, we're going to have to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll have to
see. For next year.
Right. But that's really what it is, right? Like you're going in, doing that. The difference in commercial versus residential is you got triple net leases in place. So that way, as your costs continue to go up year over year over year, property taxes is a great example. Those costs flow through to your tenants,
yeah,
protecting your NOI. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure you do that stuff versus in residential, as you mean, there's a maximum increase if your tenant stays, but there's not a cap on your expenses,
mm-hmm.
which to me is kind of a, you know, if you're looking at it from an investment standpoint, and I'm the province, I'm like, hey, I'm going to cap what your revenue can be, but we're not going to cap your expenses. And typically one of the biggest things that drives up your expenses is property taxes.
Mm.
So it's kind of, it can be counterintuitive to some degree if you can't turn your units over there. And then the RTA obviously isn't the friendliest thing to landlords.
Right.
So to recap, our four steps to more than doubling your cash position in commercial real estate. Step number one.
Find yourself a good commercial agent.
Find yourself a good commercial agent that understands the market you're in. And the biggest component of that is making sure that you know the vacancy rate, or at least have an estimate of the asset class you're buying. Every step could go perfectly after the fact. But if you have too high of a vacancy rate and the tenants can just get up and move down the street, your whole game plan's gone. Because what's going to happen is you're going to be leasing it back out for the same price they were paying.
Vacancy.
Okay. Number two. Know the lease rates of the markets that you're in. And if you're going to secondary and tertiary markets, really, really, really important that you know the lease rates in the area, because a couple blocks can make all the difference. One thing I will say with the markets is kind of a general rule of thumb is most markets, just this is also probably from a lender perspective, population of probably 100,000 or greater. So that would kind of make kind of like Kamloops and Nanaimo kind of the smaller markets within that threshold that you want to make sure, or a trade area of about 250,000. And that number just sort of kind of keeps a healthy turnover of tenants that you will be able to kind of backfill some units as we go. Setup number two, understand the lease rates of the market that you're in. Don't guess. If you're dealing in industrial and you're going from 10 to 12, that's 20%. If you're going from 10 to 14, that's a 40% increase. Know that. Because if I'm budgeting $14 a foot or a 40% increase in my rents and it's 12, that's a huge percentage loss. So you got to understand the asset class, at lease rates of what you're buying into.
So what's the best way to go about that? Do I just call, I go on williamwright.ca, I find
absolutely,
an area
yeah.
that I'm
yeah, absolutely.
And like a commercial agent just knows this. If they're operating well, there's in that certain, market, they just know this.
There's certain markets that this strategy works in. And a lot of it is markets that have gone through a massive turnover of product and investors and all of that stuff for the past years. Like if you go back to Victoria 10 years ago, it was on no one's radar.
Yeah.
The metrics were all there. As that market changed dramatically, where you have more employment opportunities and all so many industries are growing, like education and medical and tourism and construction and real estate. And there's so many industries now that are feeding that market. It becomes more and more desirable because more people want to be there. And if more people want to be there, you're going to see vacancy rates fall on the housing side of the multifamily side of it. As more people come about, more people have disposable income, that's going to affect the retail side of it. You know, the industrial side will be affected. The office side will be affected because these people that live there, they need to work somewhere. Mm-hmm. So more people now have demand for space with it. So if you look at a market like that, where it changed so much over the past decade that people that were owning in Victoria 10 years ago, you mean, are probably laughing financially now because the buildings have had such a tremendous run up because demand has changed so much. The lease rates in that market have also changed dramatically, where tenants that maybe were paying 10, 20 bucks for retail might now be paying like 30, 40, 50 bucks for retail. And if you look at, if you go to like a prime spot, Coquitlam, Port Moody, Burnaby, you know, maybe it's 60, 70, $80 a foot. Well, if you go down to Government Street or Douglas in the right corridors, it's probably higher than 80 bucks a foot. I'm pretty sure some of the new stuff down right by the Empress there and some of the newer construction projects, it's probably 80, 90, 100 bucks a foot. Which is the same thing we're seeing over here, right? So the metrics were always there, just demand kind of crept up and then off it went. So the strategy may not work as well in a market like Victoria, which is really, really matured. Kelowna's going through that maturity process already, although they've come along, their market's grown tremendously. Kamloops is yet to probably sort of feel that, but Kamloops is also an isolated market versus Nanaimo, that you have so many feeder cities around it, just like Kelowna, you got so many feeder communities around it. So getting into the markets are going through that massive transition, population growth, industries are growing. That is the markets that this strategy works in, which probably works really well in a market like Vernon, or probably works really well in like Nanaimo, or maybe Parksville, if you can find the right asset in the right area, or maybe Duncan for that matter, or Langford. So it's like you have to get into the markets that are going through massive transition and you're finding those legacy leases, but demand for the product now is so much more increased that the vacancy rate has fallen, but the lease rates have skyrocketed.
Makes sense.
Number three, this might be, again, assuming you're bringing in really expensive capital, which is kind of how this works. the short-term leases is so important. If you find buildings that tenants are paying $6 and the market's 12 and you're losing $4,000 a month on the building, but they got a 5-year lease in place, and I'm losing, you know, $48,000 a year for 5 years, call it $250,000 to make numbers easy, that $250,000 has to be factored into your pro forma.
Yeah.
Because if this tenant's there for 5 years and they're not coming out and I'm losing money on the building every month, I got to factor that in. So these, all these additional costs have to pencil. The other thing I'd be kind of cautious of, and we kind of saw this kind of coming out of COVID, 5 years could feel like 20 years now. The world can change at rapid pace, dramatically, through health, through pandemics, through technology, that a 5-year plan on a property, a lot can change in that time frame. I would be very cognizant of that. That's why the shorter term leases are really important, not only to get the capital out and get the debt replaced, but also lots can happen in 5 years.
So when you say short term leases, really you just mean a short period left.
Very short period of time. Maybe, yeah. Maybe you buy it, maybe it's got three tenants in there, one's month to month, and one's up for renewal in 6 months, the other's up for renewal in a year. That is what we're looking for.
Short term.
We've got to turn that capital or vacancy. But again, now you got to analyze what's causing the vacancy. Is the market demand just not there for the product? Is that asset class suffering? Has something changed dramatically in the area? Like maybe the traffic patterns have changed. Maybe a two-way street has become a one-way street now. Maybe a bus terminal opened up. That's a very problematic thing for that building where you might have homeless people or something like that that are now encompassing that area that weren't there before. So you have to really peel back that onion to understand what the vacancy issues are with a building. You can't just make assumptions that it's going to fill.
Right.
Number four, you have to buy the building on close to or a current market cap rate. You cannot pay for future value, because if I'm paying for future value, I'm taking all the risk financially. I could have additional costs I'm not taking into consideration. All these things can add up really, really quickly that you're paying for your own risk at this point. So you got to buy it on current market cap rates or relatively close to current market cap rates. The days of buying buildings with stabilized income are gone. Can't fall for that when you're buying. This strategy will not work if you overpay for the building and you're buying future value that you have to roll up your sleeve to put in. So those are your four steps. Sounds easy.
Okay.
But hire a good broker that knows the marketplace, that understands leasing and cap rates and asset classes and all that stuff in the markets that you're looking at. And the markets that work best for this are markets greater than 100,000 people or trade areas of 250,000 that are going through usually above average population growth, industry growth, all of that stuff. Really, really important.
And as a little extra Christmas gift,
yeah,
what are your top three areas?
Oh, now you're asking me, now you want me to give all the secrets. So I would say that the markets that this works still works really, really well in, Kelowna, if you can find the right asset classes, but again, location, location, location. Vernon, which is kind of a feeder community to Kelowna. There's increased demand there. Population growth is there. People are getting priced out of Kelowna. That's your next available place to go. That's a market that it can work really well in. But again, you have to know the asset class, the lease rates, the vacancy rates in that market, because it's a smaller market than 100,000 people. It also works probably pretty well still in Nanaimo. Victoria, it's becoming harder to make this work because Victoria has had so much tremendous growth on the real estate side. Victoria is still a unbelievable investment opportunity if you can find the right assets. This kind of works in Nanaimo quite well because you do have a lot of legacy leases. Demand for the products and that, for the asset classes, are growing tremendously as the population grows. So that's a market that it works well in. It probably works well in Kamloops as well. But again, very asset specific, very location specific. So those are kind of like four or five markets that I think you'll probably find this strategy will work better there than maybe, say, a Chilliwack. Now, I don't want to say you can't find this in Mission or Maple Ridge or Chilliwack. Again, you just have to know the vacancy rate and you have to know the lease rates of the market that you're in. If I know that, for argument's sake, Abbotsford's $40 for this one block of retail, and I identify a building comes for sale that's all $20 a foot, that strategy will work there just as well. But you have to make sure the short-term leases, and you have to go through kind of the four steps to make sure it all pencils.
And my William Wright agent is going to
find absolutely. Absolutely. We'll dig these out for you.
I'm just wondering from a practical standpoint, how does one even find these?
again, you know what it is? It's a relationship with an agent is really what it is, because so much of this product will sell off market with it. So it's like they're going, they're looking for this stuff, they're identifying the stuff, they're bringing it forward to you. So yeah, having an agent in the markets that you're doing this is like super, super important. Not a lot of this stuff will come to the surface. By that, I mean, I'm not saying it won't get listed, because it will get listed, but maybe there might be a lot of interest in it potentially, or whatever it is. If you can find the stuff off market where you have a lot of local ownership that's looking, that's slowly going to change. Like if you go to Nanaimo as an example, probably, I don't know, 75, 85% of the titles are probably registered to a Nanaimo address, because people buy what they know over time. And now you're finding more and more institutions and REITs and lower mainland investors and private sector money and all that stuff is now coming into those markets, that those titles are now getting registered to different communities, because more people can see the opportunity exists in that market that they maybe wasn't there 10 years ago. So there's your answer.
There it is.
There's the golden goose for everybody.
That was great.
There you go. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
For anyone who wants to find out more about residential real estate.
That's right.
And the market that's just going to take off dramatically.
Different opportunities.
Different show. How can they get a hold of you, Melissa?
Yeah, you can call me 778-869-4477.
And any of those who are looking for commercial real estate, you can reach out to us anytime at our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. Let us know what you're looking for. We'll put you in touch with the best agents throughout the province. You can send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca, or you can sign up on our website, williamwright.ca, for the latest and greatest news. And you'll get all the listings on market, off market, all that stuff comes to your inbox.
And you can analyze those deals.
There you go. Thanks for listening, guys. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week with another great episode.
All right. Have a good week.
Take care.
Subscribe today.